Welcoming back to the program, our friend, the talented writer and critic, Colin Fleming, who joins us this week after once again having a busy week of writing and publishing. Welcome back, sir.
Mr. Kimball, the teacher, is back in the house for year 30 there, huh?
Yeah, I am indeed. Students return tomorrow, and we like to welcome them back with those 90-degree days so they really remember how much they love school.
They say you rule by the rod. No, wrong. Not allowed to do that anymore. You rule by the mental rod of edification.
Right? That's exactly what it is. Yes. Tomorrow, you know, incoming freshmen, my job tomorrow, as I see it, work my spell, charm them, and have them believe somehow that coming to my class to learn about government in this day and age is going to be the highlight of their day.
A little proselytizing.
Yeah, just a little bit there. Man, you've got a brand new short story out in Conjunctions Online. I want to talk about the specifics of it in a moment. The story is called Sequentials, and it's not only a fascinating story, but it is in many ways a new form.
Yeah, that's how I viewed it when I wrote it, and it's not long lengthwise in terms of like a word count, and it is in three parts, and initially, for a long time, I just had this one portion of what became this triptych, really. And I built it up from that because I thought, when we tell a story often, and we say, like, oh, what was your day like? And you give someone an answer, you go in this kind of gapless order, where you're doing this accounting that is very sort of straight through. And you go A, B, C, D, you hit E, you're done. But life isn't really like that. It's much more episodic, and sort of like narrative truth originates from those gaps, that lacuna. There's like, if you were Ahmad Jamal, you would cut out pieces of sound when you were playing your jazz, because those gaps in the space would tell more stories that would abet what you were directly saying. And so I thought, you know what, you have really, what our lives are, is a series of sequences. And from those sequences, it's almost like a collage art. That's what life is. That's what a story can be. And from that, we get the meaning. So what I wanted to do was to create a story that was entirely born out of sequences. And I gave to that kind of like a literary term of sequential. And this would be the first sequential I wrote, and other people could do their version of it. But it kind of just came to me. I thought, oh, you only have one part of this sequence here. You need the other. You need sequence A, and you need sequence B, and then we're good to go.
Well, sequence A, if you will, the window well. I made the mistake of reading this. My wife's out of town, reading it alone in bed last night, and I was doing just fine. The narrator talking about doing yard work, fascinated with what collected in the window wells of this house, and then all of a sudden a girl appeared, and well, you scared the bejesus out of me.
It doesn't go well. It starts out just kind of like from the first paragraph. You have to establish so much, and I can tell with the writer if you're just rubbish within the first clause, and you have to get so much underway right away in the beginning of any story. And it's not just like narratively. You're establishing voice. You're establishing a certain tonality. You are saying things directly, and you are setting other things up. So you're giving something direct, but you're also giving kind of refraction. You're giving the sound, and you're giving echoes, but also kind of like the notion of an echo, so that when someone hears that sound repeated again later, it'll register. So it starts out like with an ominous vibe of when I became single again and my wife was gone and the children were gone and I was gone from myself in many ways. I used to do yard work at a house that had three lawns, a large sun-coated one in front, a smaller strip of wet green in the back that descended into forest, and a curving riband of grass on the side where salamanders slept at the edge and could get their backs split open by the rake. It's a very evocative image because it's something that is natural. If you've done like any yard work in a place where they're our salamanders, which is anywhere, they're kind of asleep doing their thing. And that notion of the verb there, that's split open by the rake. The rake is a verb itself that becomes a noun. So you sort of had this like double-barreled verb action that's very kind of dark and discordant and intense, but nothing's really happened yet. So when you get to the portion later where this person whose life is not really going that great is poking around in these window wells where you have things like moles or mice will be in there sometimes. If you're a homeowner, there'll be like a garter snake or maybe a baby bird or something like that that can't fly. He discovers a black snake, probably like a black racer. And after that, when he's on this lawn, he is met with this figure that seems to be, this female figure that seems to be an apparition that approaches him not as a figure would walk, but as a series of like arrivals. Like these jump cuts where the figure is 40 yards off and all of a sudden it's to his left and only 15 yards off type of thing. And it is the type of thing that when I wrote it, I was thinking like, this is short, but this is very disturbing. And it works out where he has a way to kind of quell this figure in the end. So he thinks, but the figure isn't really just this figure. This figure is everything he's going through. And he moves on from that to get back on the road. And that concludes that particular sequence.
Well, it's a measure of your writing skills that I was completely absorbed in what was in those window wells. And that's what allowed me to get scared by the presence of this girl who was suddenly, boom, right there.
Right, because there's a stillness to the window well. And if you've ever looked into one, you're peering into this kind of subterranean mini realm. It's not like you're going way down into the earth. It's like 18 inches down or whatever. But you always kind of have this bated breath, right, when you look down into one, because if something's moving in there, it's going to be what we almost think of as like icky, right? It's going to be something. It's not going to be like a happy rainbow-colored unicorn. It's going to be like a slithery, eldritch type of figure almost to us, and you have to peer down into it. You're evoking the stillness. So when you get to that discordant jump cutting, it's all the more jarring. In fact, it gives a dimensionality to the story where you feel like this figure, because you've been stilled as a reader, is also advancing upon you. So you're being pulled into the story as this thing kind of leaps out at you, and you're like, okay, and boom, it meets its natural cessation. You're done with that one. You're on to the next.
I also will add, and people have to read it, I don't trust the cat one little bit. Now, the second sequence, the remainders of Long Division, our narrator talking, we assume, to the wife that has left him.
Or it could be a different person. It could be a different version of that first person. It could be happening not maybe sequentially, chronologically, but it could be something that actually predates, in terms of like the calendar, that earlier section. And I feel like we talk to ourselves internally, albeit, more than we talk to anyone else on Earth. In fact, we talk to ourselves about the person we're talking to more than we talk directly to that person. And we make a lot of decisions in our life based upon conversations that are meant for someone else in the sense that it's not solely for us, that we are never going to say to them. So now we're in the world of like the Quixotian, where it's not the manic sort of nature of this woman, this demon sort of creature on a lawn, but rather the coffee from yesterday warmed up and left in the microwave. The late December sky, 2 hours before the sun comes up outside of smudgy windows, sitting, the desk, the bed, the desk. It's funny the things we hold on to for no particular reason or no good reason. I got an early start today because I want to have a good start to the year, try to get somewhere, get what I want, what I need, what I search for. What I used to tell myself at the end of the year might be attained in the next until I stop, because there comes a point when the pursuer need never remind himself again what is being pursued. And from there, you go into this idea of this person writing an email, a letter, which is how we write our letters nowadays, that you're never really sure that he's going to send. Even though he's not writing it for himself, he's writing it clearly for this other person. And in that process, he's reaching sort of conclusions from this conversation that maybe, in most probability, is never going to be sounded aloud. And I think that's how we make many of the decisions we make.
And then the conclusion of this story, Sequentials, takes us to a movie theater to watch. You knew one of my favorites, Robert Mitchum in Out of the Past, and a fascinating dynamic between three people who were at the screening of this film.
Right, and this one starts out, I fled the rat's nest I lived in earlier tonight because something bad was going to happen if I didn't. I was going to drink and break my streak of not drinking for 50 days, and I figured this time, if that starts again, I'll drink until I'm dead. Now, there's just so much in that. It's in the word choice, these type of things, that sort of foreboding. These are very sort of simple. These aren't even periodic sentences. They're not strung together. They're not like Henry Jamesian with multiple clauses, that type of thing. They're working downhill. See, that's the thing. When people talk about flow, what it really means is it's like you are stepping on the people mover, and the prose is taking you in a downhill direction, so you don't have to struggle against anything. It is doing the work so that your emotion can focus in on what they need to care about. And this person in this group of sequentials, he is going to see Out of the Past. And what plays out at this movie theater is not really what's up on screen. It parallels what's going on screen in that film noir. But the actual action is between people at the movie theater. There's this guy who's down front, further in front from our narrator, and he is crushing up plastic. And it's really irritating. People always find a way to be irritating at the movies, right? And this was like this particular way. And the narrator, tellingly, is in the back row because he doesn't like to have people behind him. He doesn't like to feel eyes on his back. And you can kind of read into that because someone has probably stabbed him in the back. So this is kind of like the psychological, how you put your rear end down in the seat, outpouring of that. And he sees this woman approach this guy who's been crumpling up the plastic and making all of this noise. And if you're doing that, and you're doing it throughout a film, you probably, as he says here, have other issues going on. You're not just like, I'm going to be like the biggest bastard I can at the movies tonight when you're at like an art house flick. You have something going on in your life. You have something wrong with you. And he thinks that this woman is going to kind of have this empathetic, pacifying exchange with this guy. And that's not really, and he, the thing is, he's so desperate for that to happen. If he's looking in, is this witness, because it's going to soothe, it's going to balm whatever is going on in his kind of rattled heart. And it doesn't work out that way, and he heads out back onto the street. And the thing was, when I did this, this particular sequence was actually the first one. And the editor of Conjunctions, Bradford Morrow, he said, you know what, you really should make that last. And I thought, you know what, he's right. That's a really good idea. Because what ends up happening is, even though we might be out of chronological order in the three sequences, we are moving. It parallels a day. You're going from kind of like morning type stuff in the a.m. hours to more middle of the day things to the conclusion at night. And our man walks back out onto the street just like earlier he had walked off of the lawn.
And I love the phrase you use in that closing line as he leaves the theater, more aware of the wind than usual.
Yes, and he adds on to that, in picking up my pace as I walked into it. Because the wind is, there's a song called It's Hard to Get Around the Wind. And it doesn't mean like you're actually dodging the wind, like, oh, I'm going to give you a head fake wind. The wind is, it's life. It's the real things that life throws at you. It is hard to get around the wind, and there really is no way to get around the wind. You cinch up your scarf, and you pull down your hat, and you lump your shoulders together, and you move forward. You walk. Walking is such a powerful thing, because it's never about getting from point A to point B if you're walking with purpose. Walking is about something different. So for all of the kind of like stillness in these stories, and this sequence of sitting in a movie theater, there is so much actual movement and action, because you know what, you can have anything happening on the outside of a person in terms of plot points. You can have affairs and guns and betrayals and, oh, that's really your sister, how could you do that? You can have all of those things going on and dragons out of the sky. Those plot points are fine, but ultimately the story's merit comes down to the plot points that happen internally. that's where the real roadmap of a plot has to be for something to have any kind of lasting quality to it. And so long as you make it happen on the inside, and more on the inside than the outside, it can always last.
Sequentials by Colin Fleming. You can get it right now. Conjunctions online, or, of course, by visiting Colin's website at colinflemminglit.com. Love the story so much, Colin. Always a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.
Okay, sounds good.